This is Ned Ryan, and welcome to the History of the Constitutional Convention, Episode 4. Throughout this podcast series, I want to take podcasts to highlight certain figures who are instrumental in the formation of the Constitution, and it can be said with certainty that one of the most prominent persons in the bringing about of the Constitution was James Madison of Virginia. Madison, for his role in bringing about the Convention and the Constitution, is called the Father of the Constitution. However, the irony of that title is the fact that many of Madison's basic ideas were defeated at the convention, and all in all, Madison would confess that he was profoundly disappointed with the results of the convention. Now, I don't want to make this a dry resuscitation of facts, so I'll touch on some of the highlights of Madison's life and then emphasize some of the key moments, especially as they pertain to the Constitutional Convention. James Madison was born March 16, 1751, in Port Conway, Virginia, and he was the oldest of 12 children. His parents, James Madison Sr. and Eleanor Rose, owned a tobacco plantation of thousands of acres in Orange County, where Madison spent most of his childhood years. Madison, like his father and grandfather, would own slaves. However, like many of the founders, Madison became an advocate for the abolition of slavery. I know that some want to attribute slavery to all of the founders, but many of them did not own slaves, and those that did, like Washington, Madison, and Mason, were advocates of ending the practice. I'll deal more with this issue of slavery and the founders when we get to the slave debates during the actual Constitutional Convention. But suffice it to say that with a plantation of thousands of acres, worked by dozens of slaves, and managed by his father for most of his life, James Madison never really had to work for a living. Madison grew up to be a slight man, no more than 5 feet 6 inches, though some reports place him at 5 feet 4 inches. He is described as being no bigger than a half a piece of soap. So I think you get the picture that he was a tiny, slight man. He had large blue eyes, dark brown hair, and was a bit of a shy recluse. While many boys in Virginia were riding and hunting, Madison was hiding away in his father's library, reading. Madison would leave Virginia to attend the College of New Jersey, which would later become Princeton University. His roommate at the college was Philip Freneau, who would become one of America's most prominent poets of the 18th century. If you're an English major like I was, no doubt you will have read some of Freneau's poetry. Madison demonstrated his brilliance and determination by finishing the 4-year course in 2 years. Of course, he literally drove himself into a mental breakdown in doing that. But as we can see, he recovered quite nicely, and upon graduation stayed one more year at the college, studying theology under its president, the Reverend Dr. John Witherspoon, who would himself be a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Madison would return to Virginia and was elected to the Virginia State Legislature in 1776, where he became known as a protege of Thomas Jefferson. The projects that Madison and Jefferson worked on was the Declaration of Religious Freedom, which disestablished the Church of England in Virginia and disclaimed any power of state compulsion in religious matters. The idea of religious freedom was one that Madison would push for during the Constitutional Convention and in the drafting of the Bill of Rights during the First Federal Congress. He would also serve in the Confederation Congress from 1780 to 1783 and be a part of the final ratification of the Articles before returning back to the Virginia Assembly. During his time in Congress, a lady would describe Madison as a gloomy, stiff creature. They say he is clever in Congress, but he has nothing engaging or even bearable in manners. The most unsociable creature in existence. Let's just say that Madison was a bit interpersonally challenged at the time. But it was during this period of time that Madison began to vocalize his concerns about the Articles of Confederation. He was deeply concerned about the divisiveness that the Articles encouraged and in fact institutionalized, and along with Alexander Hamilton and George Washington, he became a strong advocate for a new form of government. It was during the mid-1780s that Madison really came into his own on the national stage. He played a significant role in calling for the Mount Vernon Conference, and then the Annapolis Convention, and then finally the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, all the while laying out the significant flaws of the Articles and the need to either significantly reform them or simply do away with them. To Madison, one of the most dangerous problems with the Articles was the power that the Articles gave the state legislatures. Remember, the state legislatures were the ones who had the power to tax and regulate interstate commerce, In turn, the state legislatures elected the Confederation Congress and at the same time funded, or many times did not fund, the Congress. It was the state legislatures who decided if the articles should be amended or changed, not the Congress. To compound this problem, in the Confederation Congress, every state had one vote. Every state, regardless of size, was deemed equal in the Congress. To Madison, this was another travesty. How could Virginia, which represented a full fifth of the entire population of the newly independent United States, have only the same vote as a Rhode Island or a Delaware? Madison was determined to fix this problem and became a strong advocate for proportional representation, representation based on population in the new government. Now, I've already discussed the Mount Vernon Conference and the Annapolis Convention, and I don't really want to touch too much on the Constitutional Convention during this podcast, but suffice it to say that Madison was the ringleader for the forces calling for this new Constitution. In the months preceding the convention, Madison made a systematic study of the history of governments, primarily of republics, to why they had or hadn't worked. He then wrote several papers as a result of his studies. The first of those papers was an in-depth study of republics, both modern and ancient, from Switzerland to the Lycian and Achaean republics. The second paper, and a key document in the days leading up to the convention, was a paper called The Vices of the Political System of the United States, and it dealt with the shortcomings of the Articles of Confederation. Madison would list out 11 of the worst vices of the Articles. However, in the vices, Madison's main point was not just the deficiencies of the Articles of Confederation, but in fact the deficiencies and abuses of the state legislatures. He laid out that the states were refusing to pay up when requested, that they were flouting the Congress's authority, they were violating pretty much every treaty, abusing each other, and also abusing minorities within their own state. The Vices is considered one of the key documents in the formation of the United States Constitution, and Madison made sure that Washington and others saw it before they came to Philadelphia. Now, when the Constitutional Convention began in May of 1787, within days of quorum being reached, Madison's draft of the Virginia Plan and his revolutionary three-branch federal system would be offered on the convention floor by Edmund Randolph, and the Virginia Plan, for all intents and purposes, would become the basis for the American Constitution. It's almost amusing to think that Madison, determined to fix a massive national problem, and at times seemingly almost single-handedly, was really only about 5 feet 4 inches and 100 pounds. He was hardly the physically imposing figure of Washington, but that did not deter him from being successful, and successful he was. Now, I want to make a note here. James Madison not only played a vital role in calling for the Constitutional Convention, but it was because of him that we know all that we do about the actual events of the Constitutional Convention. I'll highlight this late in a later podcast, but the convention proceedings in Philadelphia were behind closed doors. One of the first acts of the convention was to vote that the proceedings be held in secret. The public and the press were not allowed in, nor were members allowed to talk with the public about what was taking place inside the convention. It is because of Madison and his religious attendance of every session of the convention and taking copious notes that we know today what actually took place. Now, after the signing of the Constitution in Philadelphia, Madison, Hamilton, and John Jay came together to write what is essentially an apologetics for the Constitution, the Federalist Papers. Just because the Constitution had been signed by the delegates in Philadelphia did not guarantee that the Constitution would actually be enacted. Article 7 of the Constitution stated that 3/4 of the states, or 9 of the 13 states, now had to ratify it for it to actually become the new form of government. It has to be understood that getting 9 of the 13 states to actually ratify this Constitution was not guaranteed. In fact, many of the strong proponents of the Constitution at the time freely admitted that many of the people in the United States might not actually be in favor of the document. So Hamilton, Madison, and Jay determined to lay out for the people why the Constitution was needed. And within weeks of the signing of the Constitution, the first Federalist Papers appeared in New York under the pen name Publius. The name Publius was taken from one of the first founders of the Roman Republic. I will note also that many think the Federalist Papers were written to the entire nation in attempts to persuade it to ratify the Constitution. In fact, the Federalist Papers were targeted at the populace of New York, which was considered one of the key states in the ratification battles. The first Federalist paper appeared in late October 1787 and would continue on through the summer of 1788, essentially until the end of the ratification battles throughout the country. Though Hamilton would write the majority of the papers, Madison wrote several of the key ones, including paper number 10, in which he explained how a large country with many different interests and factions could support Republican values better than a small country dominated by a few special interests. I'll touch on the Federalist Papers in more detail in a later podcast. But Madison's work was not done. He'd been successful in calling for a new form of government. The Constitution had been passed and signed in Philadelphia, but again, it was by no means a given that all 13 states, or even 9 of the 13, would actually ratify the Constitution. The ratification battles between the Federalists, those who wanted to see the Constitution enacted, and the Anti-Federalists, those who opposed it, is a fascinating story that, again, I'll touch on more in a later podcast. But suffice it to say, the Virginia Constitutional Ratification Convention, the summer of 1788, was a barn burner of a convention, pitting James Madison and his allies against Patrick Henry and his allies. I've alluded to it earlier, but Madison and Henry were not exactly friends. It might be too strong to say they were enemies, but it is not far from the truth. To further that point, Madison was successful in ratifying the Constitution in Virginia, despite a very spirited defense by Henry. As a payback for his loss, however, Henry persuaded the Virginia Assembly not to elect Madison as one of the first senators. Remember that until 1913 and the 17th Amendment, U.S. senators were appointed by state legislatures. But Madison would be directly elected to the new United States House of Representatives, and he became an important leader for the first Congress through the fourth Congress. During his time in Congress, Madison married Dolly Todd. Now, Dolly had been previously married to John Todd Jr., a Philadelphia lawyer and a fellow Quaker. They had two sons, John Payne and William Temple. But in 1793, a yellow fever epidemic hit Philadelphia and killed both John and her son William, literally within weeks of each other. Shortly after that, Aaron Burr introduced Dolly to James Madison. Even though Madison was 43 years old at the time and Dolly was only 26, they began a courtship and married in September of 1794. Now, there's more to discuss about Madison, so next week I'll continue with my discussion of him and his role in the beginnings of the American Republic.